This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of February 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of February. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Before we start our recording, I'd like to express our appreciation to the editor and staff of the Hampshire Chronicle for providing us with a new home for our studio. This is the first recording in our new home, and so far we've been made very welcome. So we hope that the recording lives up to your expectations. The main headlines this week: teachers' latest to take strike action, hideous, new phone hubs come under fire, and Chronicle drive to help those in need. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was teachers' latest to take strike action. Hundreds of teachers marched down Winchester High Street yesterday over a dispute of pay and conditions. The demonstration started at 11 a.m. at the Westgate Museum and finished with speeches in Abbey Gardens. Scores of schools were closed across the county. Some were able to partially open to certain year groups. Schools fully closed included South Wanston Primary, Toynbury Secondary, Swanmore College and Bishop's Waltham Infants. In its ongoing campaign for a fully funded, above-inflation pay rise, teacher members of the National Education Union have voted overwhelmingly for strike action. Victoria Fenness, science teacher at Perrin School in Alsford, said, "We're spellbound by the turnout today and it just demonstrates the depth of feeling. We want an at least inflation meeting pay rise so we can at least pay our gas and electric bills. All of the money which goes to staff pay increases comes out of the school's pot." Ms. Fenness added, "I know it's inconvenient, but head teachers haven't planned accordingly, which has made it more disruptive." Daniel Eastham, also from Perrin, said, "I'm on strike because there is a severe teacher shortage and we need to make the profession more attractive again." A picket line was held outside Perrin's in Alsford yesterday. Liz Down from Toynbee School in Chandler's Ford said, "We are fighting for fully funded pay rises for teachers, not stealing from existing school budgets." Laura Wells said, "The way the teaching profession is at the moment, things need to change to provide young people with what they need." Laura's son, Ethan Wells, 17, also took part in the demonstration. The Peter Simmons College student said, "I've seen the workload she has to go through, and I think it's diabolical the amount of work she has to do compared to the amount she's paid. Things need to change. They are paid disastrously little for what they have to do." After today, further strike days are set to be held on March the 2nd, the 15th and the 16th. Councillor Steve Forster, Executive Member for Education at Hampshire County Council, said, "The County Council has communicated with Hampshire schools to reiterate the natural guidance and to support them in preparing as far as possible for any strike action by staff. I would highlight that the National Education Union's dispute is not with the local authority, but with the government regarding pay." And it's a photograph of the demonstration, all with their placards, very colourful, a lot of pink high-vis type jackets, which I suppose might be sort of to do with the teachers. Anyway, they're saying, "I'm using my teacher voice," and various things like that.
Hideous new phone hubs come under fire. The proposed new BT Street hubs in Winchester have been attacked by the city councillors as hideous and horrendous. BT wanted 5 new signs to replace phone boxes, and as well as having device charging, free emergency calls and air quality monitoring, they will have 2 adverts on each hub. The company has applied for planning permission for the structures on Jury Street, High Street and St George's Street. But city councillors on the town forum have attacked the proposal. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the BT hubs were ugly and unnecessary and would obstruct people with limited sight. They are going to be horrendous blots on the townscape, she said. Branding them as hideous, Councillor Charles Radcliffe said BT could use smaller units, but these were effectively billboards to make money for the company. Councillor Chris Westwood said that as a member of the planning committee, that would probably decide the BT application, he would not directly comment on the plans. But as chairman of the Winchester Walking Strategy Group, he was concerned by the amount of street clutter in the city centre. The forum heard that A-boards, whereby businesses on side streets promote themselves on the high street, are the responsibility of the Highways Authority, which is Hampshire County Council. Councillor Chris Edwards said, "It seems there has been a mushrooming of A-boards as businesses compete for people's pounds, and we need to make sure that it is not taken advantage of." Concerns about the telecommunications street furniture is nothing new. Back in the late 1980s, the then-new Mercury phone boxes on the high street were attacked in similar terms. They were removed in the 1990s as use was poor and people starting to have mobile phones.
And our, excuse me, and our third one this morning is Chronicle Drive to help those in need. The Hampshire Chronicle is today launching our Put in a Pound campaign to help fight poverty in our region. We are asking readers of The Echo and our weekly sister titles, the Romsey Advertiser, the Andover Advertiser, and Basingstoke Gazette, and the Isle of Wight County Press, to put in a pound to support charities facing unprecedented demand amid the cost of living crisis. Almost a quarter, 22%, of children in Southampton and the Isle of Wight now live below the poverty line. The latest data from the Department of Work and Pensions suggests more children than ever before are living in families with a low income in the New Forest, 14%, Eastleigh, 12%, and Winchester, 10%. The figures are 12% in Basingstoke and Deane and 11% in Fareham. More than 30,000 local children and young people are being hurt by poverty in our region. By donating £1, you'll be supporting families choosing between heating and eating, older people at risk in cold homes, and children without warm clothes. We are working with the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation, HIWCF, an independent charitable foundation connecting donors with the local causes and charities that they care about. The foundation, which awards grants to help people in need, has thousands of pounds available to match funds. Your generous donations, meaning your cash, will go even further towards helping great causes in Southampton and across Hampshire. Jackie Scott, who's the HIWCF CEO, said, "As the cost of living crisis hits hard, many people are turning to their local community groups for help and support to simply put food on their table. One food bank we support has seen a 14% rise in take-up since April 2021. And that's why the work of HIWCF, supporting the charitable and voluntary organizations around the region, is so crucial. These groups offer a lifeline to individuals and communities every single day. As a region, we're facing fuel and energy crises like we haven't seen in decades, and this is resulting in serious financial difficulty. Many people, for the first time, find themselves in the impossible situation of choosing to either keep warm or buy food. And that's why we're asking those who are able to put in a pound and help us and NewsQuest support the most vulnerable across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. And if you wish to donate, you can donate at hiwcf.enthuse, which is ENTHUSE.com/profile.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Bell Garum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Dole, Reginald James Dole, known as Jim, died at home on the 21st of January, aged 74. Folds, David Folds, died suddenly at home on the 14th of January, aged 88. Canali, Shirley Canali, died peacefully at home on the 20th of January, aged 87. Lambert, Anne Lambert, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 9th of January. Langridge, Wilfred Charles Langridge, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. Phillips, Betty Phillips, died on the 7th of January. Ray, Vera Jean Ray, née Goddard, died peacefully at home on the 19th of January, aged 89. Stott, John Sutherland Stott, died peacefully at home on the 10th of January, aged 89. Sutcliffe, Virginia Joyce Sutcliffe, died peacefully on the 25th of January, aged 86. And White, Anne White, died peacefully at home on the 22nd of January, aged 84. Now, Andrew, I think you've got a Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment comes from Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church, and it's entitled Faithful and Fruitful. Jesus told the parable of the talents about a boss who entrusts three of his servants with differing amounts of money before going away on a long business trip. On his return, delighted to find that the first two have invested and doubled their amounts, he praises them with the praise, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Both have demonstrated their loyalty in using their initiative and skills to grow what they had been entrusted with. By contrast, the third, much more risk-averse servant, simply buries his money in the ground, fearing potential loss, and returns it unchanged to the unimpressed master with disastrous consequences. You can see Matthew 25 for the full story. Faithfulness can be defined as staying true to an original person or thing, and it suggests a kind of steadfastness or an immovability in the face of stress or change. In this case, however, the servant who tried to simply stay the same was actually punished for not putting his money to work. Those who were praised for their faithfulness showed loyalty by looking after the master's longer-term interests, taking calculated risks, and making a good investment for growth. For Jesus, it seems, faithfulness is active. For those who have chosen a life following Jesus, it can feel like enough of a challenge just to remain faithful to him, to his word and to his ways through the ups and downs, especially through the recent trauma of COVID and the current economic turmoil that we're all living through. It would be enough, one might think, in a season such as this, to simply stand tall, keep the faith, and stay emotionally healthy while the perma-crisis rages around us. And yet, in God's kingdom, there is always an invitation to further growth and fruitfulness. And it's not about how much skill or talent we possess, but about how we choose to invest that which we have been entrusted with. "This is to my Father's glory," Jesus says in John 15, "that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." As we spend time with Jesus, deepening our friendship with him, we are filled with his Spirit, and our character continues to grow and change. Aiming to be a non-anxious presence with other people can mean choosing to be the most mature person in the room. It's not always easy, but Paul's encouragement to the Galatians and to us is, "With God's help, to grow in the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. The outworking of that fruitfulness also looks like intentionally investing time and energy in our workplaces, communities, families, and churches. As carriers of hope and bringers of life, we can bring God's creative solutions to the everyday challenges, and we can speak words of encouragement and kindness to those who might otherwise be struggling, and witness what God is doing in the people we are with. To me, that feels like a life of faithful fruitfulness.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you have the first, I think.
And this from Michael Campbell, headed Down Battle. I have commented on this in the past and would not do so again were it not for your article about one of the protesters writing and publishing some verses on the subject, Chronicle, January 26. The poet recalls her participation in the protest, which delayed construction of the M3 by a number of months at enormous cost to the economy. I have not read her verses, but she is quoted as recounting a return to St. Catherine's Hill 10 years ago that prompted the writing of one of them. She said she walked from the station through the city to St. Catherine's, a walk where the latter part was not possible before the Twyford Downs section of the M3 was constructed, and a walk now enjoyed by many city residents and visitors. She goes on to rhapsodise about, quotes, black tarmac replacing white chalk, and the cutting being a gaping chasm, all totally subjective, over-orchestrated views shared, I suspect, by very few, if any, of the many people who now enjoy recreational access to the Down. Are those the reasons she and her compatriots wasted so much public money 30 years ago? I thought it was more about ecological issues, so why didn't she note the desolate scene of ecological despoliation? Quite simply, because the contrary is the case, and the natural regeneration of the sides of the cutting are now home to many more species than existed 30 years ago, when the Down was closely grazed by sheep. Has the, quotes, precious hill been destroyed? No. Is the Chalk Hill blue butterfly now extinct? No. Has the motorway failed to address the then traffic congestion problems? No. Has the rock rose been killed off? I don't know for certain, but very much doubt it. And it has been joined by more species than were there 10 years ago. Sorry, 30 years ago. So a lost and pointless battle, and a cause only of wasted resources. Michael Campbell, Sheldon, Alton.
And this one is entitled Cathedral Events. As a regular concert goer, I was disappointed to read in the Chronicle Letters page, January the 19th, that the cathedral is no longer to allow concerts on Saturday evenings. Apart from depriving audience members, some of whom cannot attend on weekdays, I imagine this will have a major impact on the amateur performing groups, many of whose working members are only able to rehearse and perform at weekends. Surely the cathedral should be encouraging and facilitating as much access and activity as possible. Winchester Cathedral is unique and a wonderful asset which belongs to us all. With a desperate need for income, this action seems like shooting oneself in the foot. What's behind this? And that was from Paul Montgomery, Peninsula Square, Winchester.
And this letter is from Rod Youngman. Rash railway decisions prove costly. The present landslip on the railway at Hook, causing major disruption on services to London from Winchester, reminds me of a similar incident at that location some years ago. Trains were diverted from Winchester via Alsford and Alton. Unfortunately, the authorities allowed this line to close in 1973. If it had been electrified in 1967, as the present main line was, then expensive rail replacement bus services to Basingstoke, when engineering work takes place or incidents occur, could have been avoided. And that is yet another example of Dr. Beeching's rash decisions. And the letter is accompanied by a photograph of the railway where that major landslip on the line at Hook, which is an enormous landslip, is really quite disastrous for that and will take some time to repair.
And this from Pearl Gibbons, headed Hospital Hope. With reference to the letter remarking on moving Winchester A&E, etc., closer to Basingstoke, and also reference to Bushfield Camp development, what a wonderful opportunity to build a hospital here. There is easy access from the motorways, large catchment areas, good parking and bus routes. The decline in Winchester is disheartening, but here there is a real opportunity that benefits so many. It's time that Winchester stopped dithering and gave us something much needed, not cafes, wine bars and such, but a brand new state-of-the-art hospital that would benefit all. Pearl Gibbons, Hyde Street, Winchester.
Smart shopping. There's a great deal of talk about saving the planet, but it seems to me not much action. I've done the once weekly shop at Tesco's for years and I rate the store very highly. Yet many of the suppliers seem to have little thought for our planet. For example, toothpaste in cardboard wrapper, washing up liquid in endless plastic, some fruit and veg pre-wrapped. Isn't it time some of these were stopped? Okay, less convenient for us, but we should not think of our future. Are we unable to put a few potatoes in a reusable bag? A much more difficult but related topic concerns fresh produce with thousands of air miles. Can we justify having products like asparagus thrown from Chile? And no, we don't need another conference to discuss this. We need some action. And that's from Tony Gaister of Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery.
And this is a letter thanking the NHS. I am writing to express my gratitude to the National Health Service for the wonderful treatment I have received in my lifetime from them. As a dental patient, I have always received first-class care. Whatever and whenever I have needed something done, for example, a filling, a crown, etc., they have done it without pain or fuss. I even had an operation on my left jaw to remove teeth that at the time were growing in the wrong direction and needed to be removed, which was done for me. My dentist and GP has always seen me on time and given me appropriate treatment for my needs. Nurses have always checked my blood pressure, given me blood tests when I needed them. During COVID, we were all given life-saving injections, and that is typical of the quality of care they provide to their patients, saving our lives. The NHS should be given our support and thanks, often delivering for us beyond the call of duty, in the past and present. Thank you, NHS, for all the work you do for us every day on our behalf. And that's from G. Patterson Moutre, Oliver's Battery Road North, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we have editorial comment, first person, Nan Delgara. Nikki, please.
And the editorial comment headed Helping Hand for Those in Most Need. The Hampshire Chronicle is joining its sister papers in NewsQuest today to today launch an appeal to help tackle poverty. The Put in a Pound campaign aims to highlight the often hidden issue. It will support charities facing unprecedented demand amid the cost of living crisis sparked by the COVID pandemic and the war in Ukraine. The latest data from the Department of Work and Pensions suggests 10% of Winchester children are living in families with a low income. The figure in Southampton is 22%, New Forest 14%, Eastleigh 12%, Fareham 11%, and Basingstoke and Deane 12%. That is an estimated 30,000 children across the county. These are not feckless people, but ones who, through no fault of their own, are struggling with basic needs such as food and transport. These are pensioners frightened to turn up their heating, and families unable to adequately clothe their own children. The Chronicle is working with the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation, HIWCF, an independent charitable foundation connecting donors with the local causes and charities they care about. We urge you to support this appeal.
And Khalid Aziz writes, another one bites the dust. So we see yet another minister leave office in difficult circumstances. As before, the process is long and drawn out, and to no one's benefit. The Prime Minister, having decided on a process which took only a few days, is still condemned for not acting quickly enough. The Minister without portfolio, Nadeem Zawawi, briefly Chancellor of the Exchequer, sees his glittering career in business and, it has to be said, his brief foray into politics, trashed. He crawls away to lick his wounds, no doubt wondering why he bothered to try and put something back. He fell victim to a baying mob and whipped up by the media and opposition politicians. Neither Sir Keir Starmer nor the other minority party leaders cover themselves in glory, let alone the dignity we yearn for in our politicians. Don't get me wrong, Mr. Zawawi ill-judged his position and should have been more transparent. However, what role did civil servants play in this drama? Surely someone senior in HMRC will have known that there was something tricky in his sick tax affairs following the sale of Zahawi's business, YouGov, or would they? It's hard to be a baying mob to understand, used to paying, if employed, their taxes through monthly PAYE deductions. Most people who create and eventually sell businesses usually end up in some kind of HMRC negotiation, which can include a penalty, seen as a cost of doing business. Our tax laws are Byzantine. They ensure lucrative and enduring employment for legions of accountants who, far from assisting the building of economy-boosting businesses, are often nothing more than policemen for government and its exponential need for more and more cash to feed the craving more of the disgruntled and needy electorate which put them into office. What about the offshore companies, the mob bays? Not bothering to ask themselves the question about why successive governments of all stripes have never moved to close such loopholes. The answer is that the UK operates in a competitive global taxation environment. The mob has none of it. Tax the rich, while quietly muttering to themselves, obviously not me, I'm poor. It is a bit like the supporters of the right to roam, aghast when someone wants to walk through their back garden or a stranger dares to park their car in a bit of the King's Highway outside their house. More ministerial heads will surely roll soon. The chairman of the BBC, former banker Richard Sharp, is in trouble too and cannot be long in his post. The reporting so far has centred on the fact that he facilitated a loan of £800,000 to Boris Johnson. The really important story is the fact that he had donated more than £400,000 to the Conservative Party. My former boss at Television South, Greg Dyke, rightly took flak for his appointment as BBC Director General during the Blair government, after he had donated a mere £50,000 to the Labour Party. I suppose that's what the BBC would these days call balance. Again, one asks, where are the civil servants in all this? My experience of Whitehall mandarins has not been wholly positive. I have found them civil only superficially. They are certainly detached from any notion of service. Their smugness is surely summed up by the name of their trade union. These days it's known simply as FDA, covering up the fact that an acronym stands for First Division Association. It takes some crust to imply that you are the special, especially when they are clearly not that special. Rishi Sunak must be wondering where the next leak will come from. I should imagine he's long past trusting his civil servants, who in sure knowledge of their superiority in all matters and having decided that the government is doomed, which it appears to be, continue to undermine it. They say we'll get the politicians we deserve. We get the civil servants too.
And the next one from Balgarran. We got a special request for this from one of our colleagues, Jane, and as she organises our roster, then I suppose we better go with it. This is Balgarran, an alternative look at the news. A charity providing sanctuary and projects for young people is urging people to donate towards a pool table to make its new base feel like home. Winchester Street Reach moved into Unit 12 in Winall before Christmas to provide a more comfortable and supportive space. The charity, which focuses on disadvantaged communities in Week, Stanmore, Mitchell Dever, and Winall, is now raising money for a pool table to further transform the office. Reach Street already has a TV, Xbox, and furniture, which the young people helped put together, and more than £300 of the £790 goal has been raised for the pool table. Operations manager Lottie Plist said, "The move is going to allow us to really support these young people. Having a space which is outside the home, where you can talk about specific topics like sexual health, bullying and alcohol, is important. Things like pool tables help concentration and cognition, but also create a very informal and relaxed atmosphere where you can talk about things and open up." And if you want to know more about this, then go to winchesterstreetreach.org. And the article is accompanied by a photograph, and I suppose we must apologise. There's been a slight problem with the printers, I think, here. That we see a corner of the pool table, which clearly is one of the things that is the thing they're trying to get together. And then you see some of the youngsters working on furniture, which they're assembling to set up the facility. Anyway, that's a help the kids and see if we can get some donations for the pool table. The second part of Balgarran is KFC drive-through seems parked for now. KFC recently published a list of possible new restaurants across Hampshire which will feature drive-throughs and included Winchester. From a total of 13 possible locations, Winchester was being touted. However, it doesn't seem a new chain is coming anytime soon, so the KFC in Upper Brook Street is unaffected. A KFC spokesman said, "Sorry, KFC fans of Winchester, but this list is only speculative. There are no current plans to open a new restaurant in your area." Recently, McDonald's had planning permission granted for a drive-through in Winall.
Thank you. That includes Balgarran, and now we've got the announcements. We start with what's on. A couple of items this week. Maisie Adam, the TV and radio comedian, is appearing in something called Maisie Adam Buzzed at the Theatre Royal on Saturday the 11th of February at 7:30pm. Tickets are £19 and can be obtained from the theatre box office. That's on 01962 840 440. And the second information is Half Term at Mottisfont. From the 11th to the 19th of February, you can trot around the gardens at Mottisfont with creative activities inspired by Thelwell's cartoons. For more information, you can contact the National Trust Mottisfont office on 01794 340757. That's 01794 340757. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 3rd of February at 7:40am and begins at 4:59pm. And next Wednesday the 8th of February, it ends at 7:32am and begins at 5:08pm. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number is also on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And can I remind listeners of the existence of the Winchester Colebrook Club, which is specifically for people with sight impairment. The club meets monthly on the first Monday, except for May and January, and is between 2 and 4pm in the St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester. And for more information on the Winchester Colebrook Club, please contact Samantha Frolick. Her telephone number is 07714 004 803. That's Samantha Frolick, 07714 004 803. And now we continue with further items of general news.
And this one headed Prison Officer Smuggler Jailed. A prison officer has been jailed for smuggling drugs and phones for an inmate. Christopher Harmon was jailed for 16 months for sneaking steroids and mobile phones into Winchester Prison. The items were smuggled in for inmate Liam Currell, who was given a 10-month extension to the sentence he is currently serving. Stephanie Burt was given a 16-month suspended sentence for helping Harmon take the phones into the prison for Currell to sell on. All three pleaded guilty to the charges before the sentencing on Monday at Winchester Crown Court. Robin Sellers, prosecuting, told the court that Currell was selling the phones to fellow inmates for £1,500 each. Mr. Sellers said Miss Burt secured the phones and the steroids. Mr. Harmon took them onto the wings of the prison, and Mr. Currell then sold them on to other prisoners. Mr. Sellers estimated that at least 10 phones had been smuggled in. James Gray, mitigating for Harmon, said, "This is a man of some muscular stature, but also a pathetically weak man. He was flattered by the interest shown to him by Mr. Currell and Miss Burt. He was identified as the weak link in the prison system." Lucy Taylor, mitigating for Burt, said, "Miss Burt was in a romantic relationship with Mr. Currell. The original plan had been to bring designer clothes and jewellery into the prison. She decided to go along with it, but it wasn't her idea to do this." Richard Martin, mitigating for Currell, said, "He had been a personal trainer since the age of 18. He had become addicted to steroids. He said he wanted to help fellow prisoners to contact loved ones. It was a response to the difficult conditions." Sentencing, Judge Paul Dugdale said, "Prison is a difficult place. It's an odd environment. A prison relies on cooperation for everything to run smoothly. Phones in prison are a real problem." Harmon, 36, of Penton's Close, Hollybourne, near Alton, was jailed for 16 months. Currell, 31, whose address was given as HMP Guy's Marsh, was handed a 10-month extension to his current sentence. Burt, 30, of Stanley Green Road, Poole, was given a 16-month sentence suspended for 2 years. She must also complete 200 hours of unpaid work and 20 rehabilitation activity days.
City all set for a week of heritage celebrations. A celebration of heritage and history will return to Winchester for its 8th year, organisers have confirmed. Hampshire History Trust, HHT, will deliver heritage open days in Winchester and surrounding Hampshire districts in 2023 on September the 8th to the 17th. This year, the event will have a theme of Creativity Unwrapped. Hampshire History Trust Chair Nikki Gottlieb said, "We were thrilled to be back for 2023 with a theme Hampshire can shout about, behind the scenes. Hampshire History Trust is working hard to expand all our volunteer teams and source suitable funding. So if you know anyone interested in sparing an hour or two, or a business who might sponsor a celebration fit for Hampshire's heritage, please get in touch." The last event of 2022, which took place during the September, reached more people than ever before, with more than double the people from the year before clicking onto its website. Scores of businesses and organisations, including the Hampshire Chronicle, got involved to host events, talks and open days. The Trust is also said to be more than 20% of people who visited during the week had travelled more than 15 miles to attend, meaning the event brought people and businesses to the city. Its heritage podcast, His Bites, also proved popular with more than 10,000 listens during its 8th season. Nikki said that fundraising remains a major priority in order to ensure its long-term security, and that the Trust is in need of volunteers to help run this year's event, and she called for people to get involved with this special event. She said they need volunteers of all types and skills, but they particularly need people to help with the website, social media and fundraising. There are also still opportunities for businesses to get involved in sponsoring the event. And there's two lovely pictures. The first one is a craft session at Winchester City Museum, which was part of last year's History and Heritage programme. And there's children all doing their colouring and making things. And then the other picture, which is rather delightful, was the open day at Romsey Signal Box. And there is a very small person trying very hard to pull the levers back in the signal box while other children are looking on. God, you're going to need a lot of strength for that.
Ambulance strike action. An ambulance workers union has warned of further strike action in coming weeks. The GMB union has announced four further days of strike action to take place across February and March, with almost 3,500 union members taking part. Paramedics, emergency care assistants, call handlers and other staff working for South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, South East Coast Ambulance Service and South West Ambulance Service will strike on Friday the 6th, February the 20th, March the 6th and March the 20th. GMB National Secretary Rachel Harrison said, GMB's ambulance workers are angry. In their own words, they are done. Our message to the government is clear. Talk pay now. Ministers have made things worse by demonising the ambulance workers who provided life and limb cover on strike days and playing political games with their scaremongering. The only way to solve this dispute is a proper pay offer. In the face of government inaction, we are left with no choice but industrial action. GMB ambulance workers are determined they're not going to back down. Meanwhile, an ambulance service spokesman said, in previous industrial action undertaken by the GMB union, it has had extremely limited impact on our emergency 999 service and some impact on our patient transport service. That's because within SCAS, we only have around 200 members of staff who are also members of the GMB out of a workforce of around 4,500.
Recycling centre helping homeless and the planet. A Winchester-based charity providing homes and jobs to the homeless has opened a recycling centre with the aim of reducing waste and boosting income. Emmaus Hampshire introduced the new facility alongside its Winchester Superstore for donated small electrical items to be repaired, sold or stripped into component parts and reduce the amount of waste going into landfill. It's hoped that revenue from the recycling operation will help meet the cost of providing shelter to more than 30 residents who would otherwise be homeless. The centre adds to the charity's mission of providing meaningful work to its residents, with many working in the second-hand superstore in Bar End or as delivery drivers or caterers within the organisation. The new project also includes technology that can identify premium books so that they can be sold to specialist booksellers. The recycling centre was opened before Christmas by the Mayor of Eastleigh, Councillor Adam Manning, who urged Hampshire residents to support the charity by donating unwanted furniture, clothes and household items. Emmaus anticipate the development will save approximately 500 tonnes of waste going into landfill each year. Chief Executive of Emmaus Hampshire, Nigel Samuel, said, "The centre has only been open a few weeks, but already it has helped to save the equivalent carbon emissions of a car travelling 23,000 miles. It's making Winchester more sustainable and delivering a social good at the same time." And there's a lovely picture of the Mayor of Eastleigh and the Lady Mayoress and a couple of Emmaus team members. The two of them holding up lamps, and the Mayor of Eastleigh, Councillor Adam Madding, with a top hat on, which I can only presume he's selected from the things that have been donated to this wonderful place, which I regularly visit.
Fond farewell for post office couple. Owners of a village post office have received a lovely farewell from the community they have served for 24 years. BK and Sangeeta Kura received dozens of thank you letters alongside a cheque for more than £2,800 donated by residents as they prepared to close the Kingsworthy post office and shop for the last time. The shop, which is located near the Cart and Horses Junction, has been open since 1974, writes Chris Atkinson. The fundraiser was organised by Liz Tye, with a cheque and a bag of letters delivered by the former Mayor of Winchester and Ward Councillor of the Worthies, Councillor Jane Rutter. Councillor Rutter said, "They've been such a huge part of the community for such a long time, and they've always been incredibly supportive of the community and also given a great service in terms of running the post office. It's always been so convenient for everybody to have it there. I mean, I've used and got my papers from there for over 20 years, so it's wonderful that Liz took the initiative to set up this fundraiser. And so many people have been so generous. I think it's just an indication of the appreciation the couple feel, that people feel for the role that they've played over the years. BK and Sangeeta were both very thankful for the send-off they received and are looking forward to taking a well-earned break. BK said, "We are very grateful to people and the community. Because of them, we've been able to stay here and do business for 24 years. Sangeeta added, "We are going to relax and go on holiday next month, but we're looking forward to that. I think it's mixed feelings at the moment because we don't know whether to be happy or sad at the moment, but we're very happy and we're very lucky to have such good customers and friends, and they are our friends now, really. So I'd like to say a very big thank you to everybody." And there's a lovely picture of Sangeeta and BK with Jane Rutter sitting on the wall outside the post office.
And this article is headed, "Second Greta Comes to Grief," and it reminds us of just how dangerous some of the roads are when they've got iced over. Another Hampshire Greta has spun off an icy road this week. Hampshire County Council confirmed that the driver wasn't hurt and that no other vehicles were involved. The Greta lost control on the Fareham Road near Hambledon on January the 23rd. And this comes after another Greta came off the road on January the 17th on Trampers Lane near Wickham. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "One of our Gretas slid off the road near Hambledon while spreading salt on one of our higher priority routes. No other vehicles were involved, but the lorry did suffer some superficial damage. Thankfully, the driver was unhurt. The vehicle was quickly recovered and a replacement vehicle was deployed to continue salting that part of the road network." And it's accompanied by a photograph of the Greta truck, which is on a fairly narrow road, but it's completely at right angles to the road. And so it's spun right through 90 degrees. And fortunately, nobody else was hurt.
Newborn monkey springs a surprise. Staff at Marwell Zoo have welcomed the arrival of a baby white-faced Saki monkey. Spelled S-A-K-I. Marwell Zoo in Coldon Common has welcomed its newest resident, who is now living with its parents Manja and Twenky and older siblings Ray, alongside the Golden Lion Tamarin monkeys in the Life Among the Trees section of the park. The baby Saki's arrival took keepers by surprise, with the three-week-old being the pair's fourth child since being housed together in 2016. Two of the older offspring, Denny and Diego, have since been moved to other collections. The animals at Marwell are part of an international breeding program. The zoo has advised guests to be patient when looking for the new arrival, as baby Saki often blend in with their mothers when being carried around. White-faced Saki are native to South America and eat mainly seeds and leaves, but also enjoy fruit, fungi, and insects. The species has an average lifespan of 35 years. And there's a wonderful photograph of this baby Saki white-faced Saki monkey clutching his mother's sort of underbelly. And they're something to do with the light. They are absolutely golden, golden fur. But and he's there with his enormous eyes. But what is incredibly charming are his enormous ears.
Hampshire nurses opt not to join in the strike action. Nurses at Hampshire hospitals will not take part in industrial strike action next month. However, their colleagues working for the ambulance service will. The Royal College of Nursing, RCN, announced that if progress is not made by the end of January to negotiate the current year's NHS pay deal, its members in England and Wales will go on strike again on February the 6th and 7th. Members previously went on strike on December the 15th and 20th and January the 18th and 19th. However, staff at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust will not take part in the upcoming strike. The Trust, which runs Basingstoke, Andover and Winchester hospitals, said its staff are not taking part and it's not impacted by the strike. Last year, Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of HHFT, told the Trust Board of Directors at a meeting that they were insufficient votes for industrial action to be taken. Instead, hospital staff held a peaceful demonstration in support of striking nurses and colleagues. The RNC said the government has refused to engage in the formal negotiations which would stop nursing strikes. Its dispute is about the NHS pay for its financial year. It is said the government has wasted chances to avert the strike action. It said the February strikes will be the highest intensity in our history, being held at 73 NHS trusts in England, compared to 44 in December and 55 in January. Members from the neighbouring trusts are taking part in the strikes, including the Royal Berkshire NHS Foundation Trust and University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust. South Central Ambulance Services NHS Foundation Trust, which serves several counties, including Hampshire and Berkshire, will also be taking part in the strike. The RCN General Secretary and Chief Executive Pat Cullen said, "We are doing this in a desperate bid to get ministers to rescue the NHS. The only creditable solution is to address the tens of thousands of unfilled jobs. Patient care is suffering like never before." The RNC said the economic argument for paying nursing staff fairly is clear when billions of pounds is being spent on agency staff to plug workforce gaps. In the last year, 25,000 nursing staff around the UK left the Nursing and Midwifery Council NMC register.
The 20-mile-per-hour speed limit drive gathers pace. A campaign to lower the speed limit to 20 miles per hour across Winchester has received support from civic chiefs. Liberal Democrat councillor James Batho called on Winchester City Council to support the 20 is plenty campaign. Currently, Winchester operates 20-mile-per-hour zones in the city centre, Highcliffe, Winall and Stanmore, and has done for a number of years. Councillor Batho's motion, presented to the full council on January 18, calls for the campaign to be discussed across more streets and roads across the district. Councillor Batho said, "Winchester City Council has historically taken a lead in implementing 20-mile-per-hour zones in Hampshire. The city centre zone and the Highcliffe and Winall 20-mile-per-hour zones, alongside the Hampshire County Council's initiative zone in Stanmore in 2014. Winchester City Council has worked in partnership with Hampshire County Council to develop the movement strategy, which provides a framework for active travel-related infrastructure within the city area. Active travel is further promoted in the city and district by local cycling and walking infrastructure plans. In conjunction with Hampshire County Council, a bid has recently been submitted for funding of a Mini Holland to develop additional schemes to encourage active travel. Last year, Hampshire County Council initiated a review of 20-mile-per-hour speed limits, and conclusions from that are due to be decided upon later this year. A campaign organised by 20's Plenty for Hampshire has generated a high level of support from parish councils in the Winchester district. High vehicle speeds blight communities. Lower speeds save lives and lower pollution. I'm asking that we express support for the 20 is Plenty campaign. Councillor Paula Ferguson said, "I want 20 miles an hour to be the norm and higher speeds to be the exception." Councillor Chris Westwood said, "We need to change the mindset of drivers. In Winchester, the car is not king." The council agreed to pass the motion.
Water Company faces grilling over failings. Civic chiefs have said they were appalled at Southern Water's response to recent flooding issues. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, was asked about how the council is holding the water company to account. This comes after the hose pipe ban during the summer and raw sewage gushing onto Winchester High Street. Councillor Todd said, "Like all of us, I've been appalled at Southern Water's recent failures in our district, whether it's raw sewage in the High Street or Branbridge, failed supply before Christmas in the communities immediately south of Winchester, or the ongoing problem of discharges into our rivers and waterways. I also continue to be frustrated at their failure to invest to address the phosphate and nitrate issues that are unnecessarily holding up future development, or to upgrade sewerage systems to address the extra pressure of development. I know that members share my concerns at Southern Water's failings, as the motion we passed unanimously in July last year, and I'm pleased to confirm that Southern Water will be attending the Health and Environment Policy Committee on March the 1st, where committee members will have the chance to cross-examine them and the Environment Agency in public on all these issues. I've also had a chance to cross-examine Southern Water on the Council's behalf at July's meeting of the Partnership for South Hampshire, PFSH, board primarily on the issue of water treatment upgrades to tackle phosphates, nitrates and sewer discharges and make the case for investment to address these issues. The scale of the problem is such that I am seeking further meetings with Southern Water to ensure that any issues raised at the committee are followed up and to continue to press for action to address the many issues with water supply and treatment that continue to face our district." A Southern Water spokesman said, "We are sorry for the disruption that recent flooding incidents and a water supply issue has caused customers in the Winchester area. We understand the concerns raised and are working hard to make improvement to our network in these locations. We continue to work closely with key stakeholders and will keep them updated throughout this process." And there's a photograph of a very flooded lane, which presumably is Branbridge, that's right, and various other blockages in the city's sewer network.
Homeless fears over cold snap. Severe Weather Emergency Protocol, SWEP, has been activated throughout Winchester for rough sleepers. The measure was put in place by local authorities nationwide last week in response to the freezing temperatures. People experiencing homelessness are offered temporary emergency accommodation to prevent rough sleeping in extreme cold weather and the danger of deaths. The Winchester Beacon in Drury Street is helping by putting a fold-up bed in their lounge area to increase the site's capacity throughout SWEP. Michael Price, its chief executive, said, "It's mainly spaces that are open for people rough sleeping when there is an increased risk of death due to cold weather. Some of the agencies offer extra beds, otherwise they get put up in accommodation locally, which is organised by the council. The whole idea is preventing anyone from dying in cold. We work together as an outreach team and the services all join together to help anyone that we can. If nighttime temperatures are predicted to be 0 degrees or below for 3 consecutive nights, SWEP must be activated and local housing authorities must provide emergency accommodation. There is no legal requirement for people experiencing homelessness to take up the offer. However, rough sleepers are advised to stay until the severe weather ends or they have found other suitable accommodation. And Miss Price explains, some people do refuse and we work together with them still. We will continually offer them accommodation and try to change their mind. If they are rough sleeping and we know where they are, we will go back to check they're okay and we will offer them all the help we can, putting them in contact with all the other agencies. There is no legal requirement for anyone to take up our services, but obviously we all work together here in Winchester to make sure we try and prevent anyone from having to sleep in the cold.
Goodwill hopes to sort out the football pitch dispute. New Alresford Town Council has said that an agreement to allow a football club to use its pitches is, quote, not fit for purpose. Last week, Alresford Town Football Club feared that it would be evicted from its current home at Albury Park. However, the motion brought before the council by Councillor Keith Duval was withdrawn from the meeting on January the 24th. A statement from the Town Council said, "We understand that an item on the recent council meeting agenda relating to Alresford Town Football Club, ATFC, has raised concern in the town. We hope that this statement will clarify the position." And the statement is, ATFC uses the council's facilities under a license dating from 2007 that runs to 2032. However, the club and the council have agreed that the license is not fit for purpose and its terms do not work for either party. So in June 2021, we entered into renegotiations that are still ongoing. Under the current license, ATFC uses one football pitch, together with the changing rooms and all associated services and utility costs, including heating and hot water, but excluding floodlights, for a fee of £75 a year. The council estimates the total cost of the utilities and the repayment of a loan associated to the facilities to be around £9,000 per year. Under the terms of the current licence, the club is required to vacate the pitch between April 1st and September 1st each year. This is not practical for the club, not least as it doesn't cover the whole of the football season. The council would like to reassure residents that negotiations are continuing with ATFC with the aim of reaching a fair and workable agreement for both the council taxpayers of Alresford and the football club. And with goodwill on both sides, we would hope to bring this matter to a conclusion in the next few months. As an aside, this conversation started in June 2021. However, former town council chairman Robin Atkins said, "The building enhancement cost was in the region of £626,000, of which the Football Foundation granted £286,000, and the remainder being paid by NATC by a public works loan and from its reserves. There was a further grant of £35,000 by the Football Foundation for new floodlights. If NATC were to terminate the licence, then the Football Foundation are able to appoint an independent advisor to determine the scope and extent of the alleged deficiency." And this is accompanied by a photograph from the outside of the pavilion showing the grounds and the changing rooms of the football club.
Stella Matilda Cho hits the high notes. Pupils at Henry Beaufort School have brought Matilda Jr., the musical, to the stage at Theatre Royal. Stellar performances throughout saw the cast given standing ovations as performances from Matilda and Miss Trunchbull were worthy of a professional stage. Suitably dim Mr. and Mrs. Wormwood, sweet-singing Miss Honey and cake-guzzling Bruce were perfectly cast, with the supporting ensemble a joy to watch. Their song and dance routines were slick and tight, even featuring children on scooters whizzing across the stage. and all of these actors are 16 or under. Behind the scenes, it's clear there have been lots of dedicated staff members making this all happen, from music teachers to dance teachers, from tech directors to set designers. Director Kim Miles and her team should be applauded for getting star quality out of so many pupils. And there's lots of photographs. I must say, they do look really impressive. There's one of them all with their hands in sort of prayer mode, looking like little angels. And the next one with their fists pumping the air. The girl playing Matilda is obviously a bit of a star, I'd say. And one of cake-guzzling Bruce, who's got a very large sweatshirt, obviously stuffed with cushions inside, looking decidedly grumpy and fat.
Teamwork pays in Drive Against Vandals. Excuse me. The city centre vandalism has decreased, according to civic chiefs. The leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Martin Todd, was recently asked about how the recent spate of vandalism and graffiti was being tackled. This comes as more shops in the high street have had their windows smashed. Councillor Todd outlined how the council is tackling this at a full council meeting on January the 18th. He said, "We had a particular challenge with the graffiti and vandalism across the city in the spring, summer and early autumn last year. Our initial reaction was to work with Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, to significantly increase the resources for graffiti removal, in part using the additional budget allocated last year to Pride of Place work. The council's new street scene officers work closely with car parking team, BID and our special maintenance team to coordinate this work. When it became clear that a more robust intervention was needed, I called together a Pride in Place task and finish group and agreed on the need to take more fundamental approach to tackling the wider vandalism and graffiti issues across the city. As a result of a partnership collaboration with both internal and external services, including the police, Hampshire Youth Offending Team and local youth charities, a group of young people were identified as the primary perpetrators and an intervention program was put in place. This information supported the delivery of a number of immediate and diversionary interventions being put into place that included home visits to parents by the police, additional security put into car parks, and car park banning letters being issued, youth outreach, and for one individual referral to a youth crime prevention team, YCP. The partnership also made a successful application to the Police and Crime Commissioner requesting grant funding for 3 deployable cameras to strengthen our capability to tackle any further issues. This partnership approach has had a positive effect. We have seen a significant decrease in reported incidents and a reduction in criminal damage, including acts of graffiti and vandalism."
The hospital's new laser to have enormous impact. The urology department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester has received a new piece of surgical equipment thanks to the Hampshire Medical Fund. This cutting-edge urology laser has already been used for numerous kidney stone removal surgeries. Christopher White, one of the urology clinicians at the Hampshire Hospital's Foundation Trust, said, "The new urology laser is very powerful, which enables us to fragment or break up kidney stones at a much faster rate than we've been able to do before, which means we can get patients stone-free and treatment is a lot quicker. This new Rocamed Sirius laser system allows surgeons to switch between 2 settings, letting them emit low energy and high frequency blasts to break down kidney stones. Another beneficial feature of the new laser is that it is noticeably more compact in comparison to its predecessors, allowing mobility between different theatres and hospitals. This allows for more flexibility in emergency cases. The new equipment is also comparatively a lot faster and quieter than previous procedural laser equipment. This new surgical laser will have an enormous positive impact, as it should enable clinicians to treat large stones in one sitting, avoiding the need for urology patients to undergo multiple surgeries. This is an advantage to the hospitals too, because with the laser being capable of completing procedures quicker, the clinicians can perform more procedures with greater efficiency. And for more information about the work of the Hampshire Medical Fund, visit hampshiremedicalfund.org. And this article is accompanied by a picture of some of the team, the urology team at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, in their scrubs, standing alongside the cutting-edge laser, which has been donated by the Hampshire Medical Fund.
And continuing the flooding theme, road closed after river flood finally reopened. A road over the River Itchen, which was flooded with sewage, has finally reopened after more than a week of work, but remains in a dangerous state. Kiln Lane near Branbridge Garden Centre was opened last Wednesday afternoon, despite Southern Water still working towards a long-term fix for the persistent flooding. The road between Colden Common and Otterbourne was hit by heavy rainfall in January, which led to a manhole being lifted, allowing sewage to flow into the neighbouring Hampshire chalk stream. After a day of cars hitting the manhole and braving the flooding, the road was eventually closed, and Southern Water sent tankers to the site to remove the excess water on the evening of January the 14th. After 11 days of work by contractors who had to prevent unsanitary items such as toilet roll from spewing into the river, the road has been reopened but remains in a dangerous state, according to City Councillor Sue Cook. The councillor for Colden Common has sent another hurry-up email to the Environment Agency, Hampshire Highways and Southern Water to urge them to clean up the road as soon as possible. Councillor Cook said, "Where there was water continually going through the road there, it has worn away and created a dangerous drop. There needs to be road signs and cones in place to alert people. It's a beautiful place, but at the moment it looks like a scrap store. The road needs to be reinstated. Let's get it cleaned up and back to a safe state. I want guarantees that Kiln Lane is on a priority list to fix." Although tankers have left and the road has been reopened, Southern Water has warned that it is an ongoing issue and could happen again with heavy rainfall. The tankers were used to mitigate the flooding of the manhole, but the water company is working towards a long-term fix. This wasn't the first time the utility company was called to the site this year, and the same incident occurring over the new year. Southern Water has been contacted for comment.
Pay top gripe as cops feel pinch. Poor pay and bad working conditions are cited as the main reasons why Hampshire police officers are leaving their job. One in eight officers plan to leave Hampshire Constabulary within 2 years or are actively looking for jobs elsewhere, new figures suggest. The Police Federation of England and Wales said police officers are reaching breaking point and leaving the service due to pay and work conditions. The PFEW's Pay and Morals Survey, carried out in September and October last year, shows 12% of the 839 officers in Hampshire Cassabury who responded said they were planning to leave the service. About 5% said they were intending to resign from the force within the next 2 years, and 7% stated that they were already looking for other employment. Altogether, the rate is up from the previous survey in 2021, when 10% of officers said they were planning to resign. Nationally, 18% of respondents said they intended to resign within 2 years or as soon as they could. Steve Hartson, PFEW National Chair, said police officers are reaching breaking point and are leaving the service in their droves, as every element of their pay and conditions has been gradually eroded in the space of a decade. Of Hampshire Constabulary officers who said that they were planning to leave the job, the main reason cited was leaving the force was their morale, 82%, their pay, 68%. Additionally, 92% said that they did not feel the government respects them, and 71% said they do not feel that they're respected by the public. Mr. Hartshorn said, To rebuild the broken thin blue line, police officers need a pay award that acknowledges the cost of living crisis, their unique responsibilities, and the restrictions imposed on their industrial rights. A spokesman for Hampshire Police said, "It is vitally important that we have a first-class well-being offer in place to ensure that they are fully supported in doing so. People across the country are concerned about their finances, and police officers and staff are no different. The issues that are being raised are very real. Officers and staff are given access to a wide range of guidance and services to support their mental and physical well-being, as well as financial concerns."
A chocolate box with a tale to tell. A 123-year-old tin of chocolate that was dismissively rejected when it was offered to a Hampshire museum is attracting international collector interest ahead of an auction this week. The antique comestible is one of the gift tins that Queen Victoria ordered to have sent to her troops fighting in the Boer War in South Africa at New Year in 1900, and which astonishingly still retains its complete half pound of Fry's best chocolate. Members of the family that have treasured this memento for more than a century offered to donate it to the Rifles Museum in Winchester 40 years ago, only to be told, "We don't want that, we've got loads of them." Paul Cooper of Auctioneers Edison said, "No doubt they did have loads of the tins. They're not uncommon. But what the museum chap unfortunately missed was that this one still contained all the chocolate. That is incredibly rare. We also know the name of the original recipient of the tin, and that's even more unusual. He was Private Eddie Midlane, a 20-year-old lad from the East End of London who joined the 1st Battalion of the Rifles Brigade as a volunteer just before the outbreak of the Boer War in the autumn of 1899. The battalion was in action within weeks of arrival in South Africa, first in the Battle of Colenso and then in the heavy fighting throughout February as British forces attempted to relieve the besieged Natal town of Ladysmith. Private Midlane was killed at Peter's Hill, the battle that broke Boer resistance in Natal. Mr. Cooper added, "It sounds unlikely, but this is probably the most controversial chocolate ever made. An order that prompted a right royal temper tantrum and a bust-up involving the country's leading chocolate firms. The problem was that the three firms selected to make the chocolate, Cadbury, Fry, and Roundtree, were all owned by Quakers. They were pacifists, opposed to war, and appalled by the idea of being seen to profit from the fighting. They buckled, offering to donate the chocolate free of charge, but unbranded, and in tins that did not carry their names." And the article is accompanied by two photographs. One is, of course, of the tin, which actually looks in remarkably good condition, and, of course, still with his half pound of chocolate inside. And it's signed there, which is, I think, "I wish you a happy new year," by Queen Victoria. And contains an image of her head on a coin on the front, and South Africa 1900. And then there's a picture of Paul Cooper, who's the auctioneer, with the historical tin.
And following on from the last article I read about the flooding in Kiln Lane, there's one headed "Tory councillor now to go it alone," with a picture of the same flooded bit of Kiln Lane and an inset picture of Councillor Sue Cook. A Winchester City councillor has left the Conservatives to better serve the residents of her ward. Councillor Sue Cook has represented the Coldham Common and Twyford ward as a Conservative since 2015, but said she has now decided to leave the party to work for what is important to residents. The council representative, who is known to knock on residents' doors to rally their support and find out what they would like to see happening in local government, believes it's all about the people, not the party. The move means Councillor Cook will no longer be able to sit on committees such as planning, scrutiny, performance panel and health and environment. Councillor Cook, who has lived in Twyford for nearly 30 years, said, This will make no difference to my commitment and energy. Some may say I do things a little different, but last year I bucked the national trend and came home with a win and an increased majority. I wanted to become a councillor to make a difference. My priority has always been to serve the residents within my ward. My position within the party needed to come to an end, as it was becoming increasingly obvious to me that at this level of council representation, you need to vote with what is important to your ward and not always with others. Many people said to me, "Sue, we're voting for you, not your party." And that gave me even more willpower to keep going. I cannot deny it wasn't easy. We shouldn't be party-driven. It's the person at the end of the phone, email, or in the street when they ask for assistance. It's either Councillor Bronk or myself, and we share the responsibility. It would give me so much pleasure to see other councillors working collaboratively as we do, as I'm sure the Winchester City Council and other councils would make more progress rather than spending time making it difficult for the opposition and not get on with the matter in hand. We don't have that situation in Coldon Common and Twyford. We work together for the good of the two villages and our residents who voted for us. Councillor Cook is now one of three independent city councillors, along with Councillor Victoria Weston and Councillor Judith Clementson.
Shops still lying empty decades after closure. Empty shops on the Broadway in Winchester have been vacant for years with no sign of imminent revival. Units at 158 and 159 High Street between Alfie's Pub and the Corral Bookmakers are still unoccupied after almost two decades of being closed. The buildings are owned by the City Council, which in recent years has placed posters in the windows to camouflage the shop's disuse. The posters promote the Visit Winchester marketing brand. The City Council has said that with the future of the Central of Winchester regeneration still unresolved, there is no plans for renovation. In the past, the cost of renovating the fabric of the building has deterred a major internal refurbishment. In 2015, the Chronicle reported that the building was set to be converted into flats and a new retail space by the firm behind the previous Silver Hill regeneration scheme. Two flats were planned to be fitted on the first floor, and the dividing wall between the two units was going to be demolished to create a single shop with a new two-story extension to the rear. The site had been previously bought by Henderson UK Property Fund, a subsidiary of the Silver Hill developer, TH Real Estate. However, as the Chronicle reported in February 2016, the council decided to terminate the Silver Hill development agreement with Tree and leave the building empty since. In a statement, the City Council said it had owned the building since 2018 and it was unaware when it became vacant. Asked if there were plans to refurbish, the statement continued, "This building sits in the Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning Document area, and the aim is to consider proposals for the building in line with the guidance set out within it. The council currently is going through a procurement process to find a development partner for the CWR for council-owned land in and around the building. It therefore makes sense at this stage to wait for the outcome of that process so plans can be considered alongside those for the wider site. The building is currently in a poor state of repair and any interim measures other than work we have done to improve the facade wouldn't be efficient use of finances when there is a longer term plan in place."
This article is headed, "The French Connection Comes to Fruition." Somebody obviously likes alliteration. Vintage milestone for wine paradise. A vineyard near Alsford is preparing to release its first vintage bottles made purely from the estate's vines after a champagne house made its move to Hampshire. Pinglestone Estate in Drove Lane was taken over by a French champagne house in 2016 and planted its first vines in 2017, with the aim of making the, quote, best English sparkling wines. Although wines from the estate of 40 hectares have been available since 2020, with the current release being from the 2018 harvest, the vineyard is now looking forward to launching its first vintage wine made 100% from the estate. Champagne company Pommery made the move to English sparkling wine in 2015 with the start of the Louis Pommery project, with the Franken Pommery Monopole being the first champagne house to plant vines in the UK. Vineyard director Clément Perlot from the Ardennes in France said, "We really fell in love for the hill at Pingleston. We discovered after that it was close to the beautiful area of New Alsford. It is the perfect site because of the pure chalk, good drainage, natural shelter from the wind, and a microclimate due to the River Arles and low altitude. And there are more inexplicable reasons for the atmosphere on top of the hill. With the aging of our vines, with time, work and passion, we aim to produce the best English sparkling wines." Pingleston Estate sparkling wine should be available from 2024-2025. Currently, three English workers including vineyard manager James Bowman are employed. And Mr. Bowman said, "Pingleston for me provides a small piece of paradise on the outskirts of Winchester. The aim, since planting 5 years ago, is to balance our vines with the existing natural habitat. We have a beautiful 360-degree aspect of Pingleston. Shallow soils over ancient chalk dominate the slopes, and the quality of the Louis Pommery grapes comes from this beautiful combination of geology and climate paired with our natural growing philosophy." And the estate's yields are set to increase, and Mr. Perlot anticipates production will reach between 150,000 to 200,000 bottles per annum within the next 5 years. So Lloyd's, a champagne house that owns the site now, of course it won't be able to be called champagne, it'll have to be called premium sparkling English wine. And there's a series of photographs, and it really does look quite idyllic, that here in Hampshire we are growing wines that absolutely challenge those of the best champagne district.
Shop relocates. A Winchester High Street store has relocated to the site of a former High Street cafe. Kloss and Hamblin, C&H, reopened its doors at Walcott Place on Saturday. The fabric shop has downsized to a smaller unit, taking over the premises of Eat, Drink and Be, which closed in 2021. The store was previously based near the other end of the street at 8 High Street, shutting on Saturday, January the 21st. Store manager, Julie Pither, said, "We've only been open since Saturday, so very early, but it was really nice and lots of nice comments from the customers. Most of the customers we had were our original customers. It's very early days, and I think we've had a few customers asking where our haberdashery is, and they didn't realise that it was only the furnishings. So obviously a couple of disappointed customers, which we expected, but lots of nice comments from the furnishing customers." The Winchester branch held a party in the former property for previous and current members of staff. She said, "We had an amazing staff party. We had 70 people come, and they were all from 1988 when I started up until the last staff, and so it was really nice but sad to say goodbye and thank you to everybody. The store has relocated just a third of the business, and the staff team has also been reduced from around 30 to 5 employees, with 25 made redundant. And I'm wondering where one will get haberdashery products from now on."
Golf Club backs cancer charity. Prostate Cancer was the chosen charity for Avington Golf Club seniors and ladies section last year, with a grand sum of £3,900 raised with various events. The cheque was presented to Prostate Cancer's representative, Alan Roper, by previous captains Jeff Vale and Brenda Yaron, supported by the current Avingdon Seniors captain, Dave Green, and the ladies' captain, Karen McCleary. Alan, a prostate cancer survivor, thanked the golfers and explained that the money would go to further research and hopefully eventually the setting up of a national screening service for prostate cancer. Alan told of how he owed his recovery and well-being to regular checks and encouraged all men over 50 to get a PSA test from their GP. And there's a picture of the members holding up the check of £3,900.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.